for a quick look at a number of hot topics in the world of golf this week. Let's go inside the ropes.
It is the PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Ropes segment. We do it each and every week discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf, and it's brought to you, as always, by PGA National Resort and Spa. Topic number one, Patrick, Phil Mickelson. This is the biggest story in the golf world this week, and unfortunately, Phil's wife, Amy, has been diagnosed with breast cancer. The three-time major champion said on Wednesday that he will suspend his PGA Tour schedule indefinitely. He will miss defending his Colonial title next week in Fort Worth. He will also likely miss the U.S. Open next month at Bethpage. Amy Mickelson is among the most visible wives on the PGA Tour. She is a former Phoenix Suns cheerleader. She regularly walks during the rounds and mingles easily with the gallery. They met in 1992. They were married in 1996, and the couple has three children, Amanda, who is 9, Sophia, who is 7, and Evan, who is 6. Pat, your thoughts on this unfortunate story?
Well, it's devastating, Russ. I mean, if we can remove for an instant, you know, that Phil's got to go through this with his wife, and they got to do whatever they need to do for the foreseeable future to make sure that, you know, they're doing everything they can to get it rectified as best as they can, if that's even possible. But from, you know, which is much more trivial at this point, but from a PGA Tour standpoint, and I heard this mentioned, I think, on Golf Channel the other night, for the second year in a row now, the PGA Tour is going to be without probably one of their two biggest stars, Tiger Woods last year with his knee, and now Phil, you know, like we talked a little bit about earlier, I'm not sure. It doesn't sound to me like he's coming back this year. I think this is one of those situations that either they found out about this very recently and it's a lot worse than they thought it was, or they've known about it for a little bit, and now that, you know, the surgery part is coming upon them and all that entails, it doesn't sound like Phil's mind is going to be right to be playing golf. I think he, if it's not as serious as we think it is, he might try to play in the U.S. Open because, you know, Bethpage, he played well there last time and the crowds love him and all that, and he might try to make a run at that. But if he doesn't play in that, Russ, British Open was never a big tournament with Phil anyway. May try and come back for the PGA Championship, which he's won in the past. But I don't know if that – the only thing that has the allure for him, if this situation is not as dire as we think it is the U.S. Open. So if he tries to come back for that, or if he can come back, I think he'll try to come back for that. But if this situation is as serious as we think it is, I don't think you're going to see him the rest of the summer.
I agree with you, Pat, and I'll just add quickly before we move on to topic number two. This is such an unfortunate story. Obviously, first and foremost, unfortunate for Amy and her health. But when you think about Phil Mickelson, and just for a second, set aside the health issues, which are the biggest issues and the most important, but in regards to his golfing career, it almost seems like he was starting to get back on track. Had that great finish at the Masters last month. It was his best finish in a major since the meltdown at Wingfoot in 2006, and he was going to be, along with Tiger, one of the two biggest favorites going into Bethpage. But obviously, that's not the biggest issue here, and the health of his wife is, and that's why he probably won't be at Bethpage, and he probably won't be on the PGA Tour, as you mentioned, for the rest of the year.
And I do agree with you. I think, you know, that it took him, it was going to take him about 3 years to get over that wing foot, and he was just starting to get over that. And it's just a shame all around, and hopefully Amy will end up being okay.
Of course, and our thoughts and prayers are definitely with the Mickelson family.
All right, number two goes to you, Russ. Nancy Lopez, who we've had a chance to meet. We met her at the Hispanic Chamber event. When was that, a year ago?
That
already?
Was last year, yeah.
Oh, my God. But we had a chance to meet Nancy. Very nice lady. She's 52 now, mother of three daughters, preparing for empty nest syndrome by plotting to make her competitive presence more visible on the LPGA Tour, according to the Nashville Tennessean. Lopez, who curtailed her playing schedule and had her Nancy Lopez farewell tour in 2002 in order to focus on raising her children, was in Nashville on Sunday for the Vince Gill annual Pro-Am tournament. She told the Tennessean that she has an 18-month plan for her comeback, which includes foot surgery. I miss it, she said, according to the newspaper. I've got that competitive spirit. Rush, your thoughts on Nancy Lopez making a comeback?
Here's my thoughts. What is she thinking? She's 52 years old. She's a mother of three. She's soon to be a grandmother. She's nearly three times older than Michelle Wee, who is 19. Paula Kramer, Lorena Ochoa, Morgan Pressel, Brittany Lincecome, Suzanne Pedersen. These are all the girls she'll be competing against. They're all in their early to mid-20s. She has no chance. I don't get this. I mean, and she made a comeback a couple years ago. You'll remember she played in a couple of LPGA Tour events, and she missed the cut in all of them. And she's a Hall of Famer. She's won 48 times on tour. She had a phenomenal career. Why can't that be enough? Why does she need? I don't understand this. And listen, I'm not trying to be sexist, but a 52-year-old woman is much more way past her prime than a 52 or 53-year-old man. You know,
oh, you're going to get some cards and letters, Russ.
I.e. Greg Norman, that came out of my mouth, and I'm already regretting saying that. But listen, we realize
I know what you're saying.
In professional sports, we realize women hit their peak earlier than men. And then, because of that, their peak ends a lot earlier than men. When you know, look at these tennis players. Jennifer Capriati was 14 years old competing at Wimbledon. Same thing for golf as well. Morgan Pressel, Michelle Wee, they were 13, 14 playing in a women's U.S. Open, and their window pretty much runs out in their mid-30s. You see very few. Julie Engster is probably the one exception to the rule, and she's still kicking in her mid-40s. But she's a good 7 or 8 years younger than Nancy Lopez, and she's been playing all along. Lopez has been on the shelf for a number of years. I just don't see. I don't think Nancy Lopez, much less, doesn't have any chance to win, much less has very little chance to make cuts when she's making this comeback.
Well, I agree with you. I think it's a shame that women, in a way, don't have the senior tour that the men's do, because I do think there would be a market. It's small because, you know, the LPGA doesn't draw like the PGA Tour does, but you know, Nancy Lopez, Laura Davies, those types of players, they still have you know, some cachet to their name, and I think people would like to see them, maybe in a minimal number of events, but, you know, a possibility of something like that, you know, might be looked into. But as far as her coming back and playing and competing and winning on the LPGA Tour, I agree with you. And it's not just her age, per se, although that is a factor. But she says it in this article, she's got foot issues. She can't walk. And Nancy, you know, it's well known, has been dealing with weight issues where she'll try and lose weight and she'll gain it back. And that plays on, it's like my dad said, the foundation can't support the building. When you have weight issues, you usually have problems with your knees or your feet or your hips. And that's an issue that I think is catching up to Nancy. So she can't walk 18 holes. You know, whether she has the competitive spirit or not is regardless, you know, it doesn't matter, because, you know, she can't physically walk the course. So she's got to get foot surgery, and then, you know, probably has to go on some kind of a training regimen to get herself physically in shape. I do think she probably has the mental wherewithal to compete, but being at that age, now Dara Torres might disagree, but being at
but
that
Dara
age.
But Dara Torres is 42. She's not 52.
You're right. It's just a big difference. Physically in golf, there is a physical element of it, and at 52, if you can't walk, that's going to be very difficult for you to be able to compete. So I don't begrudge her anything. If she wants to come back and do it, you know, another farewell tour or farewell five-year tour, whatever she wants to do, I'm fine with it, because I like Nancy, and I think she's a good ambassador to the game. I just don't want her to go out there and be shooting 90 or 83. Four or something like that, just missing cuts. I don't think that does her any good. And regardless of her legacy or any of that, I just don't think she wants to go out that way.
Russ Evans, Pat Rooney Jr. with you. Golf Exchange presented by the Honda Classic. This is our PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Ropes segment. We do it each and every week, discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf, and it's brought to you by the PGA National Resort and Spa. Topic number three, speaking of the LPGA Tour, great news, and we mentioned this briefly on the show last week, but we definitely want to get into it a little more in-depth this week, in the May issue of the Tee Times newspaper, and Lawrence Holyfield does a great job reporting for the Tee Times newspaper, and there's a story talking about the LPGA Tour perhaps returning to Florida and South Florida specifically as soon as next year, 2010. As we know, Florida is without an LPGA Tour event for the first time in God knows how long. And last year in 2008, we had three LPGA Tour events. Now we have none. And PGA National Resort and Spa is currently in discussions with the LPGA Tour to bring a tournament, a fall tournament in 2010, to the PGA National Resort and Spa, the Palmer Course, which was stretched to a little over 7,000 yards in the redo 2 years ago. Director of Golf Operations Jane Broderick says, since the LPGA doesn't have a tour stop in Florida anymore, we're working really hard to stir things up, end quote. And she goes on to say, it would be a great feather in our cap to have an LPGA event in the fall and a PGA Tour event in the winter at the same facility on two different courses, end quote. What great news for South Florida golf fans, Pat?
Awesome news, Russ. And, you know, I don't know what Honda's situation is, but I'd love to see Honda get involved and actually sponsor the women's. So you'd have the men's and the women's at PGA. I think it'd be – where's Ken at? I think that'd be great branding, co-branding of events. But I think this is an excellent idea. I think it's – I love the Palmer course. I've always said – the former general. I've always said I like that course almost more than any other course at PGA. I think it's very playable. It's enjoyable to walk it. I think the women would love it. I think they play very well. The only small caveat I have with it is that the nines do not come back to the clubhouse. It is out there. You have to travel out to get to see some of the holes, and we had those problems at Mirasol when, when the Honda was there. So that's the minor thing I would have with it. As an overall idea to get the women back down here in South Florida and at a venue like PGA and on that course, I think it would be a win-win-win for everybody.
Okay, I have nothing else to add. You pretty much summed it all up there, Pat. Nicely done.
You don't want to commit for Ken to get Honda to sponsor that one, Russ?
Not going to touch that one as of yet. Perhaps later on this year we'll have Ken Kennerly on, and hopefully we'll also have Joel Page, Managing Director of PGA National Resort and Spa, on as this story, as there's a little more clarity to this story and there's need for dissemination of news, perhaps we can do it right here on Golf Exchange.
I just think with the Honda Junior Classic,
men's,
you'd have kids, women, and men. I don't know.
It makes great sense.
I'm not even going to charge for it. I'm not going to charge Ken for the idea. All right, number four goes to you, Russ. Tomorrow night, Monday night, we have the final edition of the Haney Project with Charles Barkley tomorrow night. Your thoughts on the show as it winds down?
Oh, man, I can't wait for the episode tomorrow night. 10 o'clock. I've got the DVR set just in case something freakish happens and I'm not there live to watch it. But this, first of all, I'll say this. I hate reality television. I despise reality television. But I'm hooked on this. This is awesome. I mean, this is like a train wreck. Charles Barkley's swing is a train wreck, and you can't help but watch. And, you know, watching the show, which began back in March, so it's been about a three-month process here. I think they had 10 or 12 episodes in total. Hank Haney, at first, was making some progress with Charles Barkley, but that little yip in his swing has kind of reared its ugly face yet again, and I really hope Charles, now they're teasing the episode tomorrow night on Golf Channel as Charles, at the end of the episode, is going to make his big decision. Does he stick with golf and try to continue to get better, or does he give it up altogether? Now, I don't think he's going to give up golf. There's no way he's going to give up golf, and that would be a pretty bad way to end the series regardless, even if he felt that way. To end the series that way is just kind of a down note for something that's been kind of fun to watch all along. So I don't think he's going to give up golf. I don't think that's what he's going to say on the show tomorrow night. Perhaps you know, they'll re-up for more episodes during the project, or perhaps he'll say, I'm going to stick with Haney, but my lessons from here on out will not be broadcast on national television, and hopefully I'll get better on my own. But David Faraday does a phenomenal job of summing up what is great about this show in this month's Golf Magazine, the May Golf Magazine issue, and he always has a column, an editorial column, on the last page of the issue, and he says, I adore Charles Barkley as an announcer, much like John McEnroe. They both have the ability to open their mouth and allow whatever is in their massive craniums to fly out unfiltered by thought or consequences. This is a beautiful thing, and this makes them the two best announcers in sports. Sir Charles is not alone in having this happen to him in the middle of his full swing, having a yip in full swing. In fact, Faraday says he can name three major champions, not just three pro golfers. He can name three major champions who had more than a few full swings, yippity doodahs in their day. When I read that, I said, no freaking way. But then I read on, and he's right. Ian Baker Finch, who at one point couldn't have hit the Gulf of Mexico from an oil rig, he said. He went out of bounds at St. Andrews on both the first and 18th tees, which is difficult to do. Seve Ballesteros, who he was the best at recovery shots, but at times, golf greatest magician, hit the ball so far offline that Lassie wouldn't have found it if it had been wrapped in bacon. And then, third, former Open champion David Duval, who, quote, needed Google Earth to locate his pill. So David Faraday, that's from his column in this month's Golf Magazine. He does a much better job than I could of describing why I'm so hooked on this, because we can relate to Charles Barkley, and we can relate to Ian Baker Finch and David Duval and Seve Ballesteros, because we don't hit it straight all the time either. And that's why I think I'm so hooked, and that's why I think America is hooked on this show.
But the bad thing with those guys, Russ, is none of them ever came back from it. So I don't know. You know, I've been watching the show, not as much as you have, but I've been watching it. In a weird way, I think this hurts Hank in his reputation to some degree if Charles either quits or he's left with his yip. Because I believe in some of these episodes, Hank was saying this is not a mental thing. He just, there's something going on with him.
Well, I disagree with that.
I do too. It's got to be mental because, you know, why else would you be doing it?
Why can he do it on the range and have a perfectly flowing swing and then get out on the golf course and have the yip, mid-swing yip? That to me is mental.
Right, and I agree with you. But Hank, I think, threw that out there. Like, hey, you know, Hank is getting frustrated. A lot of these episodes, Hank's like, this is like really peeing him off because, you know, he knows Charles can do it, and Charles knows he can do it, and then he gets out there and he does, you know, he goes back, you know, to the old yip thing. So I agree with you. I want to see how this thing's going to end, but I will say this. I think if Charles can't, with arguably the greatest teacher going right now, and can't rectify this thing, he should quit. Because I think it's embarrassing. I think you can't enjoy playing. You just saw a video of him a couple weeks ago hitting some guy in the neck off the tee.
Oh, my God, that's right.
I just think he's going to kill somebody or really hurt somebody. And I can't believe he's enjoying himself.
Now,
here's
my question. I remember that episode. What the hell was that guy doing only about 15 yards up to his right? That's like prime Charles Barkley territory right there. You can't be standing. You stand along the ropes for Tiger Woods, not Charles Barkley.
That's that
guy's fault, as far as I'm concerned, not Chuck's. All right, that was another edition of the PGA National Resort and Spa Inside the Ropes segment. We do it each and every week, discussing a handful of hot topics in the world of golf, and it's brought to you, as always, by PGA National Resort and Spa.